This episode is sponsored by Interactive Brokers. And at Interactive Brokers, you don't have to wait for the markets to open. Nope, they have around-the-clock trading. And with that, you could trade over 10,000 U.S.-listed stocks and ETFs, U.S. equity index futures and options, U.S. Treasury bonds, and more. IBKR's overnight trading helps you stay, well, ahead of the market, allowing you to react instantly to market-moving news and economic events whenever they happen. Capture more market opportunities and trade on your timetable during local market hours or wherever it's convenient for you. Enjoy bond trading with no markups, no built-in spreads, and low transparent commissions, which can help you improve your returns, of course. Rated a top online broker, Interactive Brokers has won awards from Barron's, Investopedia, and stockbrokers.com, and has been Benzinga's number one overall online broker for bonds 4 years in a row. The best informed investors choose Interactive Brokers. Open an Interactive Brokers account today and discover more trading opportunities around the clock. Learn more at ibkr.com/aroundtheclock. Member SIPC.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company. From seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Surprise inflation numbers, markets shrugging it off. Axing government spending, shuttering entire agencies, and commodities are on the move. A great time to bring on this week's guest, Carly Garner of DeCarly Trading. All this and much more on episode number 908 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Markets shrugging it off. That's something we've heard a lot about lately, haven't we? Well, let's discuss that. I'm Andrew Horowitz here, and we are in the studios at Horowitz & Company. We have a beautiful studio that we built, I don't know, maybe about 6 months ago, and I love it. It's nice and comfy. It's got all the things around that we need. We got space for other people when they record, in the recording area for the production, and we're not as cramped as we were, and it is just fabulous. It's audio visual, so all sorts of things going on. So, we like it here in downtown Fort Lauderdale, Florida, where the weather is always great. And I got to tell you something. What a great time to be alive, right? There's no shortage of, we'll say, interesting things happening. Interesting may not be the best word to describe it, but it's certainly fun times nonetheless. Last week, we talked a lot about the influence of politics on the markets and the impact politics also have on our mental state. Lots of politics out there, right? Crazy threats to other countries, assault on spending, and who knows what exactly is going on at this point as the situation takes these hairpin turns almost daily. But not much of a concern to investors. So people are thinking that maybe there is an opportunity here, or maybe they're even thinking that there's some good that's going to come out of this. The bottom line is that you have to understand that what you or I or anybody else may believe necessarily about a particular issue may not translate into how markets and money react. That's very important. Very important. Now, when you look at the markets right now, we look at what is going on and who is playing. And the studies that we brought up last week, as a matter of fact, on DH Unplugged, I had a conversation with John C. Dvorak. That's a podcast we do every Tuesday night. And I think it was last week or the week before. And it showed that retail traders are making waves in the markets and their fingerprints, I got to tell you something, are all over, whether it's footprints or their fingerprints, all over the place when you look at the trading patterns. That's not a good thing or a bad thing, just a fact. I mean, when you look back historically, when you had retail traders playing the market, it was called dumb money. That was called dumb money, was in the markets. But they really showed them in 2020, didn't they? The dumb money, the retail traders, of how much of an impact they could actually have on the markets. And in fact, how they could flip the script on many of the hedge fund managers and the other players that are in the market and screw them royally. Maybe not so dumb after all, right? Now, the issue is that retail traders typically, they generally, I would say, pursue prices rather than fundamentals. And certainly, when you look at what they do, there's some merit in their approach because trend following is a concept. I mean, it's definitely a concept worth exploring. And if you haven't looked into this, if it's not something that you've actually spent any time studying, I encourage you to do so. In fact, now that I think about it, I mean, we've had about this concept a number of times talking about this strategy with Michael Covell, right? An expert in the field. Trend Following is a book that he wrote. Charter Traders is a book that he wrote. And we can see that I think a lot of what we are noticing is that when the markets are shrugging off things that happen, like one, for example, I mean, one day after the CPI number came out hot. Markets initially dipped, right, that day, and then he attempted to have a nice bounce off the 50-day moving average, and that was kind of interesting. That was a impulsive and a reactive move, and that is institutional usually. But the next day, the PPI came out. It was neutral, but that was enough to move markets. I mean, Tesla and Nvidia were back on the move, and that helped push markets up. And then trend following are clearly on the buy side. No question about that. And the trend following that we're talking about here is really reactive to prices. The bull market is intact when you look at it from a trend following perspective. Now, there's not only retail investors that evolve, not just professionals as well. Professionals on the institutional side, but also professional retail traders that make a living. That's what they actually do, is trading futures and stocks and commodities and anything else. So let's get down and talk a little bit more about trend following for a second, because I think right now is a really important time to focus in on that. Because what is it actually? I guess we could say that trend following is an investment strategy that looks to gain profits from an asset's its price momentum by looking at and following the trend. So rather than focusing on things like fundamentals, trend followers use something like charts and technical analysis, and they look at maybe sentiment to determine the direction of that trend. And then they make the trades according to that trend accordingly. They stick with it as long as that trend is there. Now, it could be simply like a 50-day moving average that is on an upslope, or it could be something like a 200-day and a 50-day average converging. It could be even things like short-term, like a MACD or an RSI indicator. Who knows what it could be, but the point is they stay with it during that period of time. This is what I mean when I say that fundamentals or really any other input is put aside right now for this. It's not good or bad. Again, it's just education on the strategy. Plenty of people make a lot of money doing this. I'm sure there's plenty of people that lose a lot of money doing this too, but the fact is that there is a place for this in the markets and investing, particularly for shorter-term trading. Longer-term trading, well, if you have a long-term trend that stays intact for a period of time, well, you're going to be on the right side of it, right? Now, when we look at this, and we want to get more specifically into the idea of trend following, because what is it supposed to be? You know, you look at the actual definition. It's supposed to be this systematic approach, and it relies on a set of predefined rules for entering and exiting trades. That's what it says. And what does it do? Well, it helps you as an investor manage your risk. It helps you avoid the emotional decisions. And that approach that they use as a trend follower can be applied to various time frames, from short, like, I don't know, 10 minutes, to long term, maybe daily or weekly. Now, here's the one thing I think, as I was thinking through talking about this, the one thing you need to know about this is that trend following is probably the most effective in markets with clear and, I guess, persistent directional trades. But they'll have a big problem in sideways, choppy markets with no clear direction. So, of course, as a purist in the trend following area, when there is that choppier sideways market, you're not going to be there. You're going to be like, nope, I'm out. I'm not dealing with that. So the trend, generally speaking, when you look at the longer term trend, and that's different than the shorter term trend, is up and to the right. It is for markets that have been very resilient. And so with that, it's interesting because I had conversation this week with clients and the question came up like, what are you doing in this crazy, scary environment? And I said, what do you mean? Well, with all the things that are going on and the news and the flow and, you know, we're takeover Greenland. We changed this body of water to this name and taxes and tariffs and closing down. I said, here's what we're doing. Here's what we're doing for our clients, right? For one thing, to be very, very clear, listen up. We're not making any knee-jerk moves. Because from a fundamental standpoint, and even a technical standpoint, markets can stay irrational for a good long time. Now, whether they're rational or not is up for discussion. We can argue back and forth that the forward PE, the peg ratio, the opportunity, we could say whatever we want, is this or that. But bottom line, the fact is that markets can stay irrational for a good long time, whether the price is, you know, at the bottom or the top. Usually, as the trend goes to the upside, it stays irrational longer than if we have a correction. Those are quick. And just because there's a fundamental break, a break from reality, that we have this massive inflationary environment does not necessarily mean, not saying that we have that, that markets need to come down right now. Just because the CPI was 0.5 versus 0.3 and the PPI was neutral, but a little bit hot and the core was fine, and we see that retail sales were lousy this week and we see that the revisions were up, so we got to offset some of that. Just because we see that, or maybe we see stocks skyrocketing, like going crazy in the AI space, or maybe even in the quantum computing space, right? Just because that is the case doesn't mean that there's an imminent danger. I'd rather get a clear signal that something has changed before making any moves, wouldn't you? So then the question we have to ask ourselves is, has anything changed? Well, perhaps. Certainly the leadership in the markets has gotten a little wonky, don't you think? I mean, we had the clear leaders. It was the big mega caps for a while, and all of a sudden they're getting soft. But what's happening? There's a rotation, clear rotation into other areas of the market that did not do so well over the last few years. Financials are doing fine, and we're seeing that utilities, you know, are doing great. We're seeing that areas of like energy is starting to pick up a little bit. And why? Well, there's a perception that these names, these areas are going to do better on lower taxes and deregulation and, well, a Republican stronghold. The fact is that it's too early to tell. It's just, I mean, that's why I tell everybody, I tell every client, we're going to wait to see the white in the bear's eye if it comes. If that bear marches over the mountain, we're going to look at it. But you know what? It's been there a few times. We've seen these big drops, right? The DeepSeek, what happened a few weeks ago with all the names in the AI space or NVIDIA, and everybody involved was just pummeled. Came right back, relatively. We want to wait to see the white in the bear's eyes to make any substantial changes. Now, with that in real life, I'll tell you something. We have increased our hedges in the TDI managed growth strategy. We have done some rebalancing in our strategies and took some profits this week and last week. So there's that too. But not so much that we're going to be like, you know what? We're out or we're fully in. We're just being smart right now. So something to think about. With that, I think it's time to talk commodities and trading. Our guest today, Carly Garner, is a futures and option broker with DeCarly Trading, a division of Zahner Financial Services in Las Vegas, Nevada, with nearly two decades of experience. Her commodity market analysis is often referenced on Jim Cramer's Mad Money and CNBC, and she's a regular guest on Bloomberg Television's Options Insight segment with Abigail Doolittle. And you might also have seen her on the Cow Guys Close, hosted by Scott Shalady on RFD TV and Futures aired on Schwab Network. She's a regular contributor to TheStreet.com and is pro service and is also a regular in the speaking circuit. So we got a lot to talk about. So Carly, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for being on. I want to start with a few things. I want to start with a generic conversation today on commodity trading. And then I want to get into more specifics on ideas, thoughts, what's happening with certain markets, and maybe intermarket kind of stuff too. Okay. So
sure.
Let's start with, I don't think I've ever asked you this, but share with us your journey into the world of commodities trading and what inspired you to pursue this career, which some people may think is nerve-wracking.
Absolutely. I mean, honestly, I feel probably 10 or 15 years older than I actually am. And that's because futures markets trade 23 hours a day, 5 days a week. They open up on Sunday night. I picked a really brutal business. I didn't actually choose it. I think it chose me. Mm-hmm. I thought I wanted to be a stockbroker. I did an internship during college and I did all those sorts of things. And then when I got into it, I realized this is not for me. I'm not a very good salesperson. And this is like very high pressure sales, or at least the situation I was in. Wasn't going to work for me. So I just stumbled into commodities and found it interesting. You know, it's one of those things, never a dull moment. It's not always pleasant. I mean, the peaks are really high and the lows are just pathetically low and painful, but I'm never bored. So I love what I do.
Definitely cannot be bored in this area, no. Especially with, you know, the only thing that trades more is obviously cryptocurrencies, right?
That's true. Yes.
You can't have, if you do that professionally, you can't have a life. It's impossible.
No, absolutely not. I mean, no, just think of the stress you'd be under all the time.
There's enough stress between even 9:30 to 4. Forget the extended hours.
Exactly. So, I'm with you.
So what are some of the maybe common, I don't know, the misconceptions about commodities trading that you encounter, mm-hmm. and how do you address them?
You know, the overall arching theme is that commodities are more risky than stocks. And I think the reason people come to that conclusion, and I'm not saying they're not, because they are for most people, and I'll explain why. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly why. There are two things that make commodities different. One is their leverage, like you mentioned, and most people don't understand just how risky leverage can be. The futures markets are designed for people to use very high levels of leverage, but you don't have to. And most people don't understand that. And what I mean by that is, let's say, for example, you want to buy a micro gold future. The margin on it is, I'm just kind of ballparking here, it's like $1,200. You're trading roughly $30,000 worth of gold. But if you funded your account with $30,000 and bought one micro, you take all the leverage out. Most people don't realize that, and they don't want to realize that, because mm-hmm. they think leverage is going to always work for them, but it can work against them. And so that's why commodities are more risky for most people, because they don't understand leverage and they're probably overusing it. Also, commodities don't just go up forever like stocks do. Stocks are very forgiving. I'm not talking about like an individual stock, but if you buy an index and you hold on for 30 years, chances are you're probably going to come out ahead. Commodities aren't like that at all. We've seen I've been in this business for over 20 years. I've seen crude oil go from $30 to $150, back to zero, back up to $100. I mean, it's really crazy. It doesn't just appreciate like inflation, which people tend to believe inflation is going to just bleed into the commodity markets and they're always going to go up, but that's not how it works.
That's a good point. Commodities, generally speaking, aside from an ETF, aside from maybe a fund, commodity trading, mm-hmm. when it comes to futures, is not a bull, buy and hold scenario. There isn't like a 20-year oil contract. Maybe there is, but there's no 20-year oil contract. We're talking about months.
Yeah, weeks or months. And sometimes when markets get volatile, you'll see an entire year's worth of price changes in a couple of weeks. That we've seen that in coffee just recently. We saw it in oil a couple of years ago. So crazy things can happen in commodities. Mm. It's not for everybody. I spend most of my day explaining that to everybody. There's a time and place for commodities, and the futures markets are great for hedging. They were built for hedging. That's why they exist. But it's not for everybody.
So. I'm gonna ask a question that may be not the right question to ask you because you're so involved in this. But what are your thoughts on the let's call it the social, the moral use case or immoral maybe on commodities on food that is allowed to be food in particular. I'm not talking about energy. Forget that. I'm talking about like rice. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about any kind of foodstuffs, right? Agriculture and foodstuffs. What is your thought on that? Allowing speculators, not commercial mm-hmm. hedgers. I'm not talking about that, right? That's a different story.
Sure.
You got a farmer that looks at the season and he's like, you know what? The price is going to go up, but go down. I got to do this. I got to do that. Okay. Just to kind of make sure it all stays within range. But the speculators, bringing up the price of my pork chop.
Yep.
What's your thought on that? And why is that even allowed? At least from my experience.
No, these are great questions. So I get this a lot and I talk about this a lot. The thing is, if you're in the commodity business, whether you're a producer, an end user, a consumer, a speculator, a hedger, doesn't matter. It will always and has always been a boom and bust enterprise. There's never going to be any stable prices. That's just not how the nature of the markets work, because as prices get high, it thwarts demand and it lures production. And then we do the opposite on the low end. So it's just a never ending seesaw of survival of the fittest. So I'll just leave it at that. Now, speculators, let me just add a disclosure real quick. Mm-hmm. I'm a commodity broker. I make a living helping people to hedge and speculate in the futures markets. So I help bring liquidity to the marketplace. So this is how I make my living. So my viewpoint might be biased, but the way that I look at it is, despite the fact that I 100% agree, speculators can push markets higher than they normally would have gone or lower than they normally would have gone in a bear market. It works both ways. For example, we're seeing it in coffee right now. I don't know if any of your listeners probably drink coffee. They probably don't trade it, and that's perfectly fine and probably good. Yeah. But coffee's 5 years ago, coffee was under $1 a pound. And I'm not even exaggerating here, there were farmers that were literally committing suicide because prices were so low.
Wow.
They couldn't feed their families. They didn't know what to do. You know, coffee's grown in different parts of the world, not the U.S., like South America, mm-hmm. Africa. So things are a little different there, but it was that the prices were that depressed and the industry was just that overwhelmed with negativity. We are at the exact opposite end of the spectrum. Now coffee is above $4 a pound. So we've quadrupled in price. And believe it or not, the same farmers that were crying and blaming speculators for the low prices are now refusing to sell because they're waiting for higher prices. So it's really, it's really a game of greed and fear, as just like any other market. But what I'll say is speculators allowed coffee to get lower than it should have 5 years ago. And now they're pushing it up higher. It works against and for us at different times on the, in history. So we just have to kind of understand that's a game. And I'll add one more thing. Speculators may push the prices, but in the short run, but in the long run, it has to come down to math. And believe it or not, if you look at a market that doesn't have futures markets and speculative abilities. So for example, like olive oil, go look at an olive oil chart. There are no futures. Nobody can hedge. It's even more volatile without speculators than it is with speculators.
Right, because you don't have all sides of it creating a
correct.
Right. A stasis, if you will. So,
so
the coffee guys are brewing up profits, so to speak,
to be honest, the producers are claiming that their input costs have gone up so much that they're not making money. So they refuse to sell at these prices because they think they need 5 or 6 to make money. But I mean, I've seen this over and over and over again. High prices cure high prices. So it's going to be interesting.
Case. So how do you stay actually updated? There's so much, the commodity, I mean, there's so many different futures and commodity market. Well, listen, if we cut out all the financial markets, if we did, right? Just cut out the financial, if we cut out financial markets, and if we cut out futures on currencies, right? Just cut that out too. Then you have just your core commodity side. But how do you keep up to date, which is still a lot, but how do you keep up to date on all the market trends, the change in the commodity sector, what's going on? I mean, where's it all? It's a lot.
It is a lot, but that I think about it like a stockbroker, they have thousands and thousands of ticker symbols they're dealing with. Honestly, I think I have it pretty good. There's really only about 15 to 20 commodities that are liquid enough for speculators to even consider. So it's about 15, 20 markets. And believe it or not, they're kind of all intertwined. For example, we follow the meat market pretty closely, like cattle, hogs, things like that. And that's tied to grain. So they all kind of work together. So it's not like it's not as hard as it sounds. Let me just put it that way.
Yeah, I think
it's actually easier.
It's funny. Every time I think about when I talk with you, I think of the movie Trading Places. Right. I mean, can you not think about orange juice futures and pork bellies and all that stuff? I mean, that was the classic Eddie Murphy movie, right? With all
exactly.
That. But
a great movie too.
Yeah, great. What was your, so if I say, all right, one, What's the kind of your go-to? What's your favorite of all those to trade? Is it beans? Is it cotton? Is it, I don't know.
You know, I'm not sure I have a favorite ever. Each one of them have burned us here and there. So I'm kind of running out of favorites. But you know, honestly, we do a lot. Our clients are generally tend to be option traders. We do a lot of option spreads mm-hmm. and things like that. And so we're looking for things that are moving, volatility. I would say, though, if I had to pick, I'd say probably the energy sector. So mm-hmm. crude oil and natural gas is what we follow the most closely.
Nat gas. That's one that I've heard the people, you go bald within a day. You don't eat for a month. You know, it's a crazy market.
It is a crazy market. The secret to natural gas is there's probably only going to be one or two opportunities in an entire year to really do something with high probability. Everything else is just noise and you're probably going to get chopped out. So you have to be careful with it.
Yeah. So can you maybe think about just go down into, it could be something, this maybe is fresh. So just if it is, I'm sorry, but can you talk about maybe a particularly challenging trade that, mm-hmm. or maybe even a market situation that you faced and how you handle it. And I really, the reason I'm setting you up for this, because I want to then follow it up with a question about managing risk. Mm-hmm. So real life, you know, real heart sure. to heart here. Nobody's listening. Just me and you, by the way. Right. Tell me a little bit about that.
You know, so it happens from time to time, obviously. Nobody has a crystal ball. Nobody can see the future. Sometimes markets do things that they've never done before. They break all the rules. Markets are messy. So this has happened to me more than I'd like to admit. But the most recent is actually coffee. We just got done speaking about coffee. Coffee futures are trading above $4. Prior to this, the all-time high was $3.75. So we've kind of, and to be honest, it happened all in a month or two. Like we just had this massive jump. For just to give you an idea, in November of this month, or I'm sorry, November of last year, we were trading 244. So we've almost doubled in price in 3 months, which isn't just a silly move, almost unheard of. It happens, but very rare. So we got caught up on the wrong side of this. We started getting bearish too early. What we've done recently is this is kind of complicated. I'll try to keep it simple. Mm-hmm. We sold call options because the volatility is really, really expanded because everything's so wild. The calls were very overpriced but unfortunately the market continued to press up and they became more overpriced. So what we do to manage our risk is the last thing, we're bearish. We think this is a temporary spike. It's wild, but we think at some point sooner rather than later, math starts to kick in and prices come back down. So as hard as it is, we started buying futures contracts against our short calls just so that we don't get, completely run over by the freight train. But
so you bought futures against the short calls rather than closing the right. calls.
Correct. Right.
Interesting.
Yep. We could close the calls, but the thing is, they literally in 3 days they went from 2,000 or 3,000 a piece to like 15,000 somewhere in there.
Wow.
So we're talking like a wild expansion of volatility. Commodity options get like this sometimes, and you can buy them back, but it's really difficult to recover from something like that. We've had better luck just trying to hedge our risk and kind of delta neutraling it, getting delta neutral, meaning as the futures market's moving up and down, we're really not making or losing anything. We're just hoping right. the time value on the option.
You crossed it. You basically, like you said, you neutralized it. You crossed it to the best of your ability just to say, okay, correct. I'm not going to take any losses here. And you can release one on the other side. You can release your future.
Yeah, exactly. We can get out of the future at any time. Now, the risk is and it's hard because we want prices to settle down or better yet, come down. But if they start coming down too hard, then our hedge is what gets us into trouble. And so that's that happens too. Honestly, it happens a lot. But the reality is I've been doing this long enough to know that you hedge first and then you ask questions later. Because if hope is your strategy, you're going to be in trouble.
Yeah, hope is not a strategy.
Yeah, it is not.
It's interesting because you look at some of the things and people probably that don't know and haven't traded commodities. You could reference back to the meme stock days where mm-hmm. I'll tell you a story. This is a true story. I had a short on GameStop before the thing went crazy.
Oh, no.
When I tell you before the thing went crazy,
yeah,
the day before it went crazy, I put it on. Okay, because it was still up a lot, you know, at that point.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And by the end of the day, I said, you know, I don't know what it is about this, how this is playing, but I don't like it. And I said, what's the worst case can happen? And so we talked about it in the office, and somebody said, well, the worst case can happen is it's going to open up 100% up tomorrow. I'm like, okay, well, that could be worse than that, of course. But, you know, trying to give me, they said, can you handle that? Right. I'm like, no, I can't handle that. I'm not going to know. Yeah. Well, I said, you know, what's the point? Why would I bother at this point?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we took it off that day. So we were like, even on the trade, I must tell you,
right.
A sigh of relief was there. But was there any particular thing there? So when you manage your risk, are you dealing with it with a technical analysis standpoint? Is it just, okay, you know what? We lost 20%. That's it. We're stopping at that point. What is it, how you manage risk? What is it that you're actually doing?
Okay. So at some point we can fairly say we're probably wrong, or at least very early. And so it's time to start hedging. Now in other markets, I'll just kind of throw this out there. Coffee is one of the most difficult markets to hedge your risk in because there's no mini or micro futures. It's just, there's one contract size, one option size, that's it. So you're either hedging with a full size contract, which moves very quickly, or you're not. Those are your choices. Mm-hmm. In markets like crude oil or gold, there's micro futures and you can slowly incrementally hedge. And that's a really far preferable way to go. But once you're in a market like this, what we try to do is we try not to let any of our options become in the money. So for example, if we're short an option, I'm just going to throw some random stuff out there. Mm-hmm. If we're short an option that is has a strike price of 425 and coffee's trading at like 415, 420, we'll say, you know what? We really don't want that thing to go in the money. It's not the end of the world if it does, because a lot of, you know, it can come back down and so on and so forth. But if we have more than a one lot, like let's say we have a couple spreads on or some additional risk, we generally try to not let that option go in the money. And the reason being, it's not quite this easy, but it on paper it is. If you sold an option with a strike price of 425 and you bought a futures contract at 425 and the market just kept going, even though you were wrong and it was a little bit stressful, you would still keep the premium you collected. So you actually would make money on a position you were exactly wrong on. So we try to hedge our bets before it gets in the money so that we're not
unscathed with a little bit of something.
Right. So the goal on that situation, maybe we can make money. Best case scenario, maybe we can at least get closer to a scratch. If you're an option seller or an option trader, option sellers are going to make money on most of their trades, but it's the ones that they lose on that can have the ability to basically wipe everything out that they've done for years. Mm-hmm. So that's the trick. You really want to just make sure you, like I said, hedge first, ask questions later, figure it out later.
Yeah. I want to get into some specific trading ideas and thoughts with Carly Garner here. I want you to make sure everybody does go over to the show notes on episode number 908 over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. You'll find all the ways and you can get in touch with Carly, the way you could, you know, work with commodities, how she does and trains and does and gives advice and whatever you're doing, you know, all the different, there's a large list of things that she does, but all that is going to be and links. And I encourage you, if you're interested in commodities, this is the person you want to talk to. I mean, you want to make sure that, you know, you understand from the best. So, let's take a quick break and let's come back with some questions on specific trading ideas to talk to you about. Let's talk about Interactive Brokers. I don't want you to be fooled by zero commissions on crypto trades. Nope. Because some brokers add a spread to the price you pay. But at Interactive Brokers, there are no hidden spreads and you pay much less than you would at Gemini or Robinhood or even Fidelity. Keep more in your pocket and trade crypto for less coin at Interactive Brokers. Trading cryptocurrencies, of course, involves risk and is only for individuals with high risk tolerance and the financial ability to sustain losses. Compare other brokers' fees and see how much you could save at ibkr.com/crypto. And we're back with Carly Garner, and we're talking about commodities. We're talking about trading. We're talking about futures and options contracts. And when we left off, we talked about some ideas about managing risk, and we talked about technical analysis and coffee and the difficulty there and all that. But I want to talk about and ask you about some specific trading ideas and thoughts. I mean, right now, let's talk about treasuries. This spread between stocks and treasuries. First of all, explain what that is and what does it mean?
So if you if you chart the last 20, 25 years, I specifically have been watching like E-mini or S&P 500 versus the 10-year note. And we're talking about 10-year note prices or the futures contract, which is kind of like an index. It actually is, it's like a basket of 10-year notes with various expirations. So it's a bit of an index. But basically, if you chart those two, you can see they tend to, in the very long run, I'm not talking weeks or months, I'm talking years, they tend to always close their spread. But we always go through periods where stocks are overpriced, bonds are underpriced, and vice versa. This is the most extreme I can see on any chart, that no matter how far I go back. Treasuries have basically had the worst 4 or 5 years of performance ever. Mm-hmm. And stocks have probably had the best couple of years of performance almost ever, maybe not ever, but we're pretty close, yep, depending on what metrics you're using. So the spread between the two, meaning stocks are, in my opinion, and chart-wise, and most things I look at, stocks are wildly overpriced while treasuries are wildly underpriced based on historic norms. And so we're expecting those to come back together. Now, to be 100% honest, we've been expecting that for a while. And it just continues to kind of feed on itself and go the other way. But cycles are, you know, I think electronic trading and algos and all those sorts of things have had a really big impact on how long cycles persist, and how extreme they become. I think it's just a different ballgame, especially when we're coming off the massive government spending and stimulus that basically has a lot of money sloshing around in the markets, mm-hmm, you know, people buying
everything.
Literally everything. It wasn't that long ago people were buying NFTs. We'll buy it. Like images on their computer for millions of, I mean, crazy things are going on. That's because there's just too much money in the system, in my opinion. Maybe we're at the tail end of that. Maybe it's next month, maybe it's next year, but somewhere in the next reasonable future, we should start seeing these two come back into line. So stocks either need to come down or stop going up, and treasuries probably need to go quite a bit higher with yields lower.
I mean, that's the intent of what they're trying to do, right? They're trying to do what they can to thread this needle, although we have some inflation numbers come out this week, both in the PPI core, which was not the core, excuse me, the PPI headline, which was a little bit hot. Core was right on line, and then a very hot CPI. But yet again, markets didn't really care very much. Didn't care about tariffs either. Don't care about earnings that much except for about a day or two, right? Then things start coming back, and you know, figuring that sometime in the future will get better, which I don't know. We can go into this, but it looks like retail traders roll over it. All right. So now we talk about treasuries and stocks, and you're talking about a mean reversion trade. So I'm assuming what happens is in that scenario, you're something like you're going to be short stocks, long treasuries, I guess is the point.
That would be the idea. Yeah. In the overall scheme of things. Now, what that means to everybody is different. For what it means, like if we're talking about not necessarily my, you know, speculative trading or me working with my clients, my personal portfolio, I'm extremely overweight, almost obnoxiously overweight treasuries and very underweight stocks. Now I, you know, that's not the right place to be in finance class. I mean, I'm a finance major. They spent 4 years telling people, don't do that. That's crazy, but that's where I'm at. Okay. So we'll see how it plays out. But yeah, that's the general idea.
But the difference is you also balance that with trading. If you were just a buy and hold, that's it, period, hard stop. Right. That would not be where your portfolio is. Let's be honest. You're balancing it with the other side with trading.
It's true. I try to keep some balance there. I'm a little over my skis probably on the treasury bull side, but then again, the way that I look at it is I lived through the financial crisis. I was young and dumb back then. I was over leveraged. I thought I was rich. I was not. I was rich on paper, but mm-hmm, it only counts if you keep it. I wasn't rich, but at that age, I was rich in my 30s. Yeah. I was rich, but then I realized it only matters if you keep it. So like if you make it and you give it back, doesn't count. You got to keep it. So this time around, I'm dead set on keeping it. That means maybe, I mean, so far I've left a little money on the table. It's okay. I sleep at night. I'm not worried about it. Yeah.
What about the spread between gold and treasuries? Now, gold is just flying, which is kind of interesting because you wouldn't think that necessarily gold would be flying and stocks up. I mean, right now we have everything up, right? I'm just painting a broad brush. But what's the story with this spread?
So I'm going to start by saying there's something interesting that I found between gold and coffee, which should be absolutely completely unrelated markets. But over the last 30, 40 days, they've been running a correlation of 96%, meaning they're going trading almost tick for tick with each other, which is totally insane. It shouldn't happen. My theory is probably algos, maybe a tariff hedge or an inflation hedge or whatever the case is. And when you see those sorts of things, it tells me markets aren't trading on fundamentals. They're just trading on momentum and some sort of narrative out there. It's usually temporary. So with that said, when I look at the spread between treasuries and gold, it too is at a massive extreme. And they really shouldn't be, like, if you think about it, gold doesn't pay interest. Obviously treasuries do.
Right.
So if you're
gold doesn't have earnings either.
Correct. Yeah. Gold is just an asset. And I have something else to add to that, but I'll wait for just a minute. Gold pays no interest. So you're either making money on appreciation or you're not. And regardless of how you get access to your gold, whether if you're holding bullion, it's expensive to store, it's expensive to move. It's just totally inefficient if you're holding the metal itself. Mm-hmm. If you're trading like a gold ETF, that's actually a pretty good way to do it, but you're going to be, your performance is probably going to be lagging a little bit. Futures is the most efficient, but it also has its drawbacks, leverage and things like that. But anyway, if you're somebody that has X number of dollars to put into the market that you want it to be safety investment, not risk assets, and you look at gold at an all-time high and then you look at treasuries at basically generational low, treasuries are paying interest, gold isn't. So normally what investors do is you see as gold prices get high, people start favoring treasuries because they're looking for that coupon payment and vice versa. If gold's low, they might be willing, and treasuries are high, they might be willing to do the opposite. But in this situation, you get 4 or 5% a year just to wait in treasuries. Whereas gold, can it go another 4 or 5% every year? Sure, it can. But anyone that's traded gold for any period of time knows it's just like any other commodity. We have boom and bust cycles. The last cycle that we saw like this, like the one that we're seeing, was 2011. And it took a decade for us to regain those highs. So,
I mean, there was a sideways action. The gold bugs were just, I remember, as a matter of fact, yeah. I remember very distinctly that the gold bugs, which we call the people who just always like Uber bulls on gold, they were talking and a bunch of them filing gave up. I'm thinking,
I know.
That's interesting.
And you're exactly right. I'm glad you mentioned it. And now it's the exact opposite. People can't buy it enough. Yeah. They're buying it from Costco. But you know what's crazy? I've talked to so many people recently now that prices are high. I mean, most people want to buy more. So not many people are thinking about selling. But I've talked to a few people that have been accumulating since the 90s and they're holding on to bars. And they're finding it's really not a very liquid market at all. Like if you're trading futures, it's immensely liquid. If you're trading the gold ETF, yes, there's plenty of liquidity. If you're holding gold bars, good luck. Like who's going to buy them from you?
I have probably coins. I have the Chinese panda coins from the 80s.
Now, if you're like people with an amount they can fit in their car, they can go to a pawn shop or a gold and silver shop, but you're still probably going to have to go to maybe two or three locations.
Yeah. Without blowing the shocks and suspension in the back of your car, right?
Exactly. So it's just such
Why is that guy riding so low? Look at that guy. Right.
So I don't know. Accumulating bullion sounds like a good idea until you end up with too much of it. And then suddenly you can't get rid of it.
Let's talk about Earl, as my grandfather would call it, or these days we call it oil, of course. So during the last Trump administration, I think you remember this, that I'm sure you did. Oil spent pretty much all its life during that time, somewhere between the 40s and 60s, right? And we're kind of in that 70s and 80s range right now. So what are you thinking about where oil is and what the future lies?
My personal opinion is, let me just lay out.
Is there a difference between personal and professional?
Yeah. Well, no, just okay. People get mad when you talk about oil. Trust me, I get hate emails all the time.
Because
everyone wants, for some reason, everyone wants oil to go up, but yeah. I don't think it's going to. Like, we've basically been seeing a market that has made lower highs since March of 2022. We had that big blow off top. It's consistently made lower highs. Each rally gets a little less momentum. If you look at the COT report, which I follow, the COT report is a report, it's commitment of traders. It's put out by the US government.
And it's every 2 weeks, CFTC. Right? Every 2 weeks?
It's actually every week, every Friday. And it basically tells us where speculators and hedgers are, like are speculators long or short and how much. And what I've noticed is every rally in oil over the last 3 years, speculators have been less willing to get long. So they're buying fewer and fewer contracts on the rallies, which tells me they're looking at other markets. Maybe they're trading coffee. Maybe they're doing something else. Whatever it is, they are probably not willing to employ any more buying power into oil unless something really fundamentally changes. And when I look at higher interest rates, higher dollar, the new administration being oil friendly, I feel like the path of least resistance is lower. I actually believe we could see the $50 area on my chart. That's kind of what I've targeted is $50. Everybody thinks I'm crazy when I throw that number out there, but the reality is, like you just mentioned, when last time Trump was in office, we were 40 to 60. And if some might even remember, we went to zero at one point during
We went to negative 30 or something like that.
I was like, how do you do that?
I want to buy some. It seems logical. I was like, you can't actually buy. Yeah. You can't. It was on paper like that, but you couldn't do it.
It was fake news. It was the front month that was expiring. Honestly, most brokerages, luckily ours, we'd shut everybody off from trading it. You'd be surprised how many people when oil got to like a dollar on the front month, our platforms were just lighting up because everyone was trying to buy it. I think in their mind, they thought they could only lose a dollar, but they could make, you know, who knows? They thought they were treating it as an option. They didn't think oil could go below zero. But a lot of people found out the hard way.
Did oil ever go below zero before that? I think it was the only time, right?
No, that was the first time.
Right, that's why they thought that. I thought that too. I'm like, it's not going to go below zero, is it? Well, nobody could think that a contract.
It's unfathomable. It was unfathomable. The reason it did, oil is kind of a weird, you know, oil's not easy to store. It has to be stored in tankers and sitting out in the ocean. If there's nowhere to store it, it's actually cheaper to sell it at a loss than to, you know what I mean? It's a unique situation.
What Carly's talking about here is the actual fact that in some cases you may have to be you may have to take delivery. So there you are trading and stuff like that in the afternoon, and in the evening you got trucks backing up to your house, parking in your parking lot with a giant drum of oil.
I had people like calling me, hey, I've got a swimming pool, can I just have it dumped in my pool? And unfortunately it's not that easy, but I can appreciate the hustle. Yeah.
All right. So also let's talk about and finish this off with this idea of, and I had this conversation last week with Danielle DiMartino Booth, and we had this discussion about her belief that interest rates over the, when I say long haul, I mean the next year or so, mm-hmm. are going lower. And I said, mm-hmm. why? And well, inflation is going to be tame and all that. Inflation actually may be tame, but I think we all recognize, and maybe one of the reasons why gold is actually continuing to make relatively all-time highs. Mm-hmm. I think we are all getting it that some of the inflation calculations have changed, thereby reducing it, because that's what they do at the Fed and the various powers that be. Not trying mm-hmm. to be a conspiracy dude, but there's been changes. We know there's been changes. There was a calculation change in the methodology, I don't know, within a year on how mm-hmm. they calculate a couple of things. And now the PCE, which they're looking at, changing the housing component to housing equivalent rents instead of the current rental amount, which is a big part of it, which they're just going to blow out, which took this PCE down like a percent. So this is what we all know, but in the fact, we're going to see different numbers in the official release. Now, mm-hmm. the market itself is kind of like thinking, okay, we're going to have a little bit of higher inflation potentially, or at least not lower, right? Not deflation.
Yeah.
And now you are looking at this. Let's combine it with tariffs. Mm-hmm. What is your thoughts on yields with that backdrop?
So here, I think she's right. I'm probably getting to that conclusion a little bit differently. But if you recall, when Donald Trump started leading in the polls last year prior to the election, the market started moving in what everyone was coining the Trump trade. And then once the election was settled, the Trump trade continued. And part of that Trump trade was selling treasuries, buying stocks. And there's a few other components. We'll just focus on treasuries and stocks. But my personal belief is that everybody was so busy pricing in inflation because of the tariffs and the expectations of inflation that they weren't paying attention to anything else. And I actually think if we've heard over and over, you know, throughout the decades, never fight the Fed. But I think the Treasury market's going to go into this thing, you know, don't fight the Treasury Secretary, who has come out and basically said he's going to do whatever he can do to push the 10-year note higher and yields lower. And I think I probably wouldn't bet against him, to be honest.
The question is how they're going to do that with the current. See, I think there's a little bit of a bond vigilante thing going on to a degree, right? You know, the rest of the world has the big problems too, but our debt to GDP, our debt overall, the fact is that if we're going to have tariffs and if we do in fact see no other, well, there's some cuts going on, wholesale cuts going on to government right now, but spending itself, I don't know if that's going to actually come down. And if in fact we do have any kind of congressional or legislative action to reduce taxes, which I don't see how that's possible, but okay, I'm all game for it. I'm there, but I don't know how you do that with a deficit that's as great as we have right now. But that's my opinion on that. So
no, I agree with you. I will add, speculators are pretty wildly short. Now they've covered some of their shorts on the futures markets, but they're still sitting on one of the largest net short positions we've ever seen in treasuries. So I don't disagree with anything. And you're saying, I'm just saying, I think it's maybe already been accounted for and the people that wanted to be short are already short. And at some point, if they cover, we're going to get the exact opposite.
I got it. Tell me again, tell everybody just for a moment, just take a second, do a Carly commercial for me, will you?
All right. If you're interested in learning about trading futures and options, visit us at decarleytrading.com. It's DECARLEY trading.com. And you can also check us on social media. I try to post charts and comments and, educational material. Also post some dog pictures. So on Twitter or X, I'm at Carly Garner.
So you just did the people that love puppies and dogs and all the people that want to make a lot of money, which is pretty much everybody. You just cover the whole gamut of the whole world right there. That's good. That's good.
Good marketing.
Very nice. She also has a love for ice cream, but just to let you know. So there you go.
Yes, I do.
Carly Garner, thanks so much for joining me. I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Thanks. And we had to cover a lot of space there, a lot of territory. We talked about trend following, current market conditions. We talked about what we're doing for our clients. We talked about commodity trading, risk management. Great opportunity to absorb all this and probably replay it a few more times. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell everybody. Go to YouTube, Amazon, Apple Podcasts, or Spotify. Go to any of the places that you find your podcast and make sure to bang that subscribe button. Isn't that what they say? They bang it, hit it, smack it. Just click it. You can just click it. You don't have to do any of those things. And make sure to follow and continue to take what's going on over on X, Twitter, Andrew Horowitz. One word is my Twitter. I need more followers, by the way. Seriously. Seems to be just all of a sudden stagnating. So go over to Twitter, X. That's where you're going to get first glimpse of when these podcasts come out. A little conversation here or there, not much of craziness, but you'll get an advance of, okay, this is happening. And some previews and things like that over on Twitter. Thanks for joining me this week and every week. Next week, we have some great guests coming up. I'm really looking forward to the lineup over the next, I think, 3 months is going to be outstanding. So do not miss an episode. Published every Sunday for the last 17 years. Thanks so much for joining me. I'll see you again real soon. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice, or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training. Advertisements are not related to the host or affiliates and are not considered recommendations by the host of the show or any affiliates of Horowitz & Company.